So I'm officially a farmer now, Glyn. Farmer Timlet.
Farmer?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I've got chickens.
I've got chickens?
I've got two chickens.
Are you mad?
Well, no, not as mad as I seem, because I haven't got them here. My neighbour, BBC Paul Clifton, has got them in his pen with his chickens. So we went yesterday and we bought four chickens. He paid for two, I paid for two. So I've got two over the road. So I will get eggs every now and then. So, no, I'm not daft.
Welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are less well known and relatively hidden. My name is Glyn Coy, and I've been doing this for quite a while now. And yes, I have with me today my usual podcasting partner,
Farmer Paul Timlet.
Farmer Paul.
Get off my land.
Brilliant. So as normal with these podcasts, we spend a little bit of time before we go into the main topic talking about stuff we've done since we last got together 2 weeks ago. And apart from trying not to get blown away by multiple storms that have battered us down, what have you been up to then, Paul?
Well, mainly being blown away by storms. Yeah, it's pretty horrendous, isn't it? I mean, in comparison to what we're used to in the south, I suppose. I mean, poor people in the north of England and Scotland who lost their power and stuff for 2 weeks or even longer. I don't know about you, but we lost ours for, I think it was 3 days. And that seemed bad enough.
I saw a clip of you on the news.
Oh, God, have you seen it?
I tracked it down. Oh, I thought, should I try and do some editing and pull this and just shove it up on the Hidden Wiltshire?
You better not. You better.
For a joke, but I thought, no, you'll kill me.
Absolutely. It was awful. It was really, really awful. So for those who didn't see it, again, the aforementioned Paul Clifton over the road, BBC Paul. I was out, actually. We'd been over to some friends to take the contents of our freezer over there. It's after, so I think, 3 days, we were getting a bit concerned because I've got loads of meat in there from the Parsonage Down, from the nature reserve where I work, which is beautiful meat, just absolutely fantastic. And they're going to be selling it via a website, which is about to go live. So I will at some point put a link onto that because it's just wonderful meat. It's the English Longhorn cattle up there, all grass fed and just superb stuff. And it's not that pricey. I mean, you know, it's about I think they undercut Waitrose, that sort of level, but it's not sort of, you know, little prices. Anyway, we had quite a lot in the freezer and I was just desperate to make sure that we didn't lose that. So we took it to some friends over in Luggershaw and they gave us a full English breakfast. And I was on my way back and I got a message from Paul saying Bryony Leyland from BBC South Today is on her way to Shrewton. We need somebody to, you know, who should we let her interview? And I knew where that was going. So I said, well, she could interview you, can't she, Paul? And he said, well, I've been on the telly a few times. It's about time you have somebody. And by the way, I've got COVID, so I can't. And, so I then suggested Paul's wife, Catherine, and didn't get a reply to that. And I said, do you want me to do it? And he said, that would be grand. So I had the Bryony Leyland and a cameraman in my kitchen filming me making a cup of tea on an old camping stove that I managed to find in the garage. And I forgot to put the tea bag in, so, you know, they were going to get listeners saying, I saw that, he didn't put a tea bag in there. And he put the milk in first. Anyway, we sort of chatted in the kitchen and they filmed and all the rest of it. And then they wanted me to go make a fire in the lounge because we've still got an open fireplace. So I did all that. And it was pathetic. I was pathetic, put it that way.
I just thought when it cuts to the scene of you putting kindling on your fire, I thought, oh, God, this looks so bloody staged.
Not at all, not at all. But thank the Lord they chopped most of it out. So I think only about 15 seconds made the cut. I hadn't realised how much weight I'd put on over the last couple of years. Who's that little fat bloke in front of the fire? Oh, God, it's me.
Oh, it's funny because I didn't know anything about it, but I was alerted to it by good friend Hedley Thorne.
The
drone photographer over Oxfordshire Way. And it was funny because he said to me that at the time he was having a conversation on the telephone with David Carson, and they were just chatting about the video that we'd made of Alton Barnes. And in the background, the TV was on, and he suddenly heard your voice, and he recognised it from the podcast. So he goes into his living room and says to his wife, he says, "Is that Paul Timlett on the telly?" And they had to rewind it, and saw you putting kindling on your fire.
What he didn't see was the barbecued rat that I was toasting.
But it was funny as well, because I was watching, obviously I'm on Twitter, and Paul Clifton's on Twitter, and he was putting up these little clips every day on Twitter of him putting the kettle on the barbecue.
Oh, yes, right.
Make his tea.
Yeah, the barbecue in the garage.
Yeah.
Along with his vintage sports car in there.
Yes, I saw
which, that. Which is made out of plastic, and I thought, that's going to make a great fire. But the hilarious thing was, having done all that, and actually Sylvie, who lives about three doors down, she was brilliant. She was absolutely brilliant. They filmed her in her cottage. I think the power came back on about half an hour after the BBC left. So I sent a text to Bryony Leyland saying, "You better pull that because it's all redundant now." But she didn't.
So how long was the power off in Shrieton?
So from Friday morning we lost it, and it came back late Monday afternoon.
Oh wow, that's a long time.
So it's hardly the Blitz, is it? I mean,
no, God's but it's, sake, it's bad enough.
Yeah,
no, I mean, here in Trowbridge, we just had main problem was flying roof tiles.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the centre of town, the old Wetherspoons pub that's been closed for some years, the roof flew off it and landed in the high street.
Oh, God. So,
they closed down most of the town centre because of roofs. It's
dangerous, roof yeah, yeah. Well, my aerial came off, so it was dangling by the cable. So I've had a big aerial because I had my FM tuner, brilliant radio, but you need a roof aerial for it. And that all came down, got blown down. It was just like hanging over next door's, over his roof, because we're quite close to the cottage next door. So it was like dangling for several days until a guy eventually came and took it down. So I'm waiting for him to come back next week to put up a new one.
Right.
We don't use it very much because we've got satellite as well, but use FreeSat. It was all a bit it wasn't traumatic. As I was saying to others, I mean, you know, what people in the north of England put up with for weeks and weeks, you know, this pales into insignificance. And of course, there are people all around the world who live like this all the time. So we can whinge about it for just a few days, but you know, we need to be thankful for what we have. We've actually got a roof over our heads. Anyway, that's enough about storm, whatever it was. Other bits and pieces. Got back to work, back to volunteering for Natural England earlier on this week. So that was, I don't know what day, it's Wednesday. And it was a bit of a change. Instead of going to Parsonage Down, we went to Prescombe Down, which is, I'm going to put a couple of just phone photographs that I took. And of course, I did post a blog, and I can't remember if we've done a podcast about that one, but I've posted a blog about a walk that I did.
I remember that. It's one of those walks I need to do.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go and do it again. I can't remember. It's not the Kitts Grave one, is it? No, it's a different walk because I started it from Ebsbourne Wake. That's right. It's the one about Anthony Eden.
Oh, right. So we have done that.
Have we done that?
I think we have.
Yeah, we have. Yes, yeah. You're right. We have, definitely. So Anthony Eden's buried in the churchyard at Alvdiston, which is the next village down from Ebsbourne Wake. So Prescombe Down is a Natural England National Nature Reserve. So we were up there what they call, well, we were brash cutting, so cutting back some hawthorn and brambles on one side of a valley, and on the other side we were called tree popping. So we're pulling up sort of scrubby hawthorns, and you've got this sort of little tool that is called a tree popper, but they don't just pop. So you know, you look at the instructions, and it just get it at the base and pull back on the lever, and the tree pops out. The first one took me half an hour. So
yeah,
but it's just the most stunning place. I mean, I loved it when I first went there, and where we were working was a like a little side valley, a bottom, you know, a coombe.
Yeah.
An old dry river valley. And I didn't even know it was there. I mean, it really took about hidden. Even though I'd sort of looked up the main valley, this was a side valley and I'd no idea it existed. And it's just the most beautiful, beautiful spot. And very exposed, the weather at the moment. It was, I mean, luckily it wasn't yesterday when we had snow and sleet and hail and all the rest of it. Wednesday was a bit kinder to us, but just a spectacular place. So, yeah, I've just got a couple of phone shots, but I'll stick that on the Facebook group.
Yeah. Well, in amongst all the storms, one thing I've been doing is counting sheep again.
Yeah.
So I've been going up to Dunscombe Bottom. And at the moment as well, the army camp there, Newt Camp, it's quite active at the moment. So there's soldiers in there. So there's obviously something going on the plain.
Well, it's been going on for quite a few weeks. I think they put the flags up on the what we call the spine road that goes from Rolleston Camp, sort of heads right across the impact area to Redhorn Hill near Urchin.
Yeah.
And that road has been shut since middle of January, maybe earlier.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was sort of early January, and it's going to be shut all the way through to something like the middle of March. But we've had the usual sort of military vehicles are not supposed to come through the high street here or down my road. There's signs everywhere saying no military vehicles because they've got, you know, the range roads, which were built specifically for them to keep them away from the centres of population. But they just follow Google Maps. So, you know, we've had 18-ton trucks going through the 3.5-ton weight limit. And, you know, it's just every day and people here are getting very, very angry about it. And yes, we understand that they've got to train and all the rest of it, but you know, they spent millions building these roads across the plain that they could use so that they don't go through villages and they just follow Google Maps. So, but yeah, there's been a lot of that. But it must be cold at Dunscombe at the moment. That's quite exposed, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very. I was up there last Sunday and it was pretty windy and wet.
Yeah,
but the sheep are pretty good at coping with the inclement weather, really.
Yeah.
They find little spots to shelter.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty good at that. It's in their genes. Yeah, I've been out on the plains a few times. Well, I went out, actually, went on Friday at the height of it. Because, of course, the plains, there's very few trees. So once you get out of the village and out there, and it was really sort of exhilarating, shall we say. Standing up was a challenge.
Yeah.
But, yeah, other than that, I've got a little sort of update to a story, and this is just absolutely stunning. It's like classic, you know, classic Wiltshire, hidden Wiltshire. It's got all the elements. It's just a great story. And it's a bit like the Sarah Lucas story, you know, Winsley, and that we were talking about last week, and this, oh, sorry, 2 weeks ago, and this is a similar sort of story. So, I think it was 2020. I did a walk again in the area I was talking about, sort of Prescombe Down, quite close by, and it's the Kit's Grave walk.
Yes.
That we, I know you've done that as well, part of that walk, and it's the one that takes in Verndich Chase and then over to Broadchalk and that way. And the sort of subtitle, if you like, to the podcast was in memory of Kay Chalk and the 1929 to, I can't remember when she died.
I think it was 2019.
2019, yes, it was, you're right. And I didn't know who Kay Chalk was. And so the story was that coming out of Broadchalk, I walked up a a track called Church Bottom, and then on through a nature reserve called Middleton Down.
Yeah, so Church Bottom is actually the location of the History Festival.
That's right.
Chalk Valley History Festival.
That's right.
And Middleton Down, I've been there. It's Wiltshire Wildlife Trust
that's
Nature
right.
Reserve.
So I walked up there. In fact, they were preparing, because the History Festival was cancelled that year, but they did do a sort of little mini gathering. So there were some marquees and things in the field there.
Yeah.
And it was a really hot day. And I walked up the track along Church Bottom. I came to a bench, and it's all on the blog, and it said in memory of Kay Chalk and the dates, and and it was a dedication from her children and grandchildren, sorry, great grandchildren, so generations. And I got quite emotional because I was sitting on the bench, because Kay was almost exactly the same age as my mum, although my mum died a lot earlier than Kay did, but they were born, I think, within months of each other. And it did bring a tear to my eye, sitting on that bench and thinking about my mum, and with all the separation that people have been through. And I was thinking about my daughter, because my mum was just besotted with my daughter and never got to see her grow up and all that sort of stuff. And I've always wondered who Kay Chalk was. And then we got a book order from Brian Chalk, who some people will have heard of. He's a thatcher, generations of Wiltshire thatchers. And Brian ordered the book. So I, because he lives quite close to me, so I contacted him and said, well, I'll deliver the book for you. And he said, oh, by the way, he said, Kay Chalk was my mum. Oh, what? I can't believe this. I'm actually, finally putting the person behind the bench and the name. So I went to see Brian. In fact, it was the day that we'd taken the meat to our friends. It was Monday. And then on the way back, I went to see Brian, delivered the book. And I'd asked him in advance if he had a photograph of his mum. And so I went to see him and stood in his garage chatting. And he said, oh, come and look at this. And there were some photographs of his mum. And I must admit, I nearly cried again. It was so there was a picture of his mum when she was very old, and she was, I think, she was lying in bed and looking very frail. But then he had pictures of her from her wedding day. Mm. And she was a spitting image of my mum. I couldn't believe it. And it was just sort of completed the circle. And he told me the story about the bench. And the bench was, his mum, Kay, sort of grew up in that area around Broadchalk. And I'm going to rustle papers here, because Brian sent me a load of prompts, because I know how bad my memory is. I'd forget it all. If it's okay, I'm going to read some of this. And he said, so my mum was short of 90 by 10 days when she passed away on the 5th of January 2019. And Brian's dad, Alan, he made the bench that I'd been sitting on, and he cleared the bank. So the local farmer allowed him to sort of clear the bank, and they put with a digger, and they put the bench there. And it might explain why I was getting emotional, because Kay's ashes are spread there by the bench. So I was sitting with Kay looking at that view, which is just a beautiful, astonishing view there. And, apparently she was born, so as you go up Church Bottom, you get to the Ox Drove, famous old droveway. And a bit further along the droveway, if you get to the top of Church Bottom, turn right, there's a farm. It's called Hut and Lodge Farm. Mm. And that's where she grew up. And Kay used to walk from there when she was a little girl all the way down to Broadchalk on her own from the age of five. Now, this is about, I reckon it was about 3 miles to down, along the Ox Drove, turn left down Church Bottom to Broadchalk. And she would either walk down there or along the road. So if you went the other direction down Ox Drove, there's a road that goes down, I think, past Knoll Farm. And her other route to school, which was slightly longer, was down that road. And Brian said that if a car came, and of course there weren't many cars in those days, if a car came, she'd hide behind a tree or a bush and then sort of, carry on. But I age of five doing that kind of walk. I mean, it's one thing doing it through a village, but out in the wilds and through in all weather. But apparently Kay's family had lived in the Chalk Valley for centuries. So they're proper old, and her family were, so obviously not Chalk. Her name wasn't Chalk. It was, he said the Comptons and Coombs. So I'm not sure if Kay was a Compton or a Coombe before she married Alan Chalk. They moved down to Broadchalk, having moved from Hutton Lodge Farm. And I think it was her father was a guy called Ernest Shoreland, and he worked on the farms up at Hutton Lodge and at Knoll Farm. And bizarrely, Brian had just finished a thatching job at Knoll Farm. So all those years later. So Kay's father, Ernest, he'd served in the First World War between 1914 and 1916, and he was gassed there, as was my grandfather. And he received a war medal. And at some point, he lost the medal in the paddocks surrounding Knoll Farmhouse.
Right.
And years and years later, someone found the medal and gave it to Kay. And on the back was his service number. And that's how they traced it to Kay. So there was his service number. And they traced his surname, his service number to... it's being Ernest Shoreland, and gave it to Kay. And Brian's got the medal. He showed it to me. So it just sort of like completed this circle, really. This, going from a walk and sitting on this bench, this memorial to somebody. I had no idea who she was, but something touched me. And then to meet the son, it was just incredible, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so had he read your blog post?
Yes, he had. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I think that's why he ordered the book, because he said, is the Kit's Grave, Searching for Kit's Grave walk in the book? And I explained that the book is more sort of a snapshot of photographs and little extracts. So it wasn't the full walk description. But he's since emailed me and said he's absolutely delighted with the book. He loves it.
Brilliant.
So hopefully he'll be listening to this today. And I mean, you know, the story goes on. I mean, his dad, Alan, he's 91 and still with us, walks miles and miles every day. he worked at Knoll Farm as well when he was younger. And, you know, sort of in later life, he was the gamekeeper up there for years and years. And he's only just retired, apparently. He's not long retired.
What story?
Yeah. And, Brian was saying that his wife now helps out in the thatching business. Both his sons are thatchers, and his daughter, Diane, has either just stopped or is about to give up being a nurse. She's just fed up with all the stress of being a nurse, and she's going to be a thatcher as well. So there's a whole family of Wiltshire thatchers. Oh, it's a proper Wiltshire story, proper Wiltshire family, not like you and I.
No, I mean... That for me is just sums up why we started doing
this. Why we do this, exactly.
It's about finding those hidden parts of Wiltshire, but finding the stories underneath as well. Because a lot of the stuff that we talk about is very rooted in the human side of things in Wiltshire. We're interested in the history and the people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
To find these connections and join the dots is brilliant. I just love it.
I mean, it's one thing seeing these old sort of hill forts and enclosures and burial mounds, but when you actually start to meet the people who have the connections to people going back hundreds of years, it's
amazing.
It just brings it all alive, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It's just a fantastic story. Yeah, so if you listen to this, Brian, thank you so much for sharing all that. And it was an absolute privilege to... I feel like I've met his mum, you know?
And
it was an absolute pleasure to meet her.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be wonderful if we could get a few of us together to go and retrace that route, really. And
Well, I was chatting to Stu the other day, because he was up at Prescombe Down with me, and I was explaining that it was just down the road where and he said, "Yeah, we've got to go and do that walk," because he's not done it yet. So definitely going to repeat that one.
Yeah, I've done part of it, but I haven't done that stretch that takes in Church Bottom.
Yeah.
Although I've done the other side, I've done Middleton Down and bits and pieces. It'd be nice to
just do the whole
follow that route and almost like put yourself in her shoes, really, when
Yeah.
She did that walk as a 5-year-old.
Oh,
and
that's
just
right.
Think about it.
It's just unimaginable. I mean, I used to walk to school when I was about the same age and mostly on my own, but it was on the edge of a town and, you know, it was, you know, never thought anything about it. And she probably never thought anything about it either. It's just in the countryside that she knew and loved. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's
that's the end of the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
we'll wrap up now.
Yeah, I think we better move on, hadn't we? Because we've already
spent
25 minutes guessing.
I'll get a letter of complaint from Mr. Jenkins.
Yeah, exactly. So in this week's podcast for the main bit, we're going to go in a slightly different direction. Again, not a walk as such, although you can walk in these places. It's more about connecting a couple of sites with Wiltshire's wartime past, really. This really takes me back to the beginning of Hidden Wiltshire. Because when I started exploring Wiltshire, I was trying to think, well, how do I find all these hidden places? It's a huge county. So what I started doing is I had a conversation with Wiltshire Wildlife Trust and I said, would you be interested in me going to some of these sites that you have that are off the beaten track and maybe taking my drone and getting some aerial shots of them that you're welcome to use in your own publications? And they were up for that. So one of the places I went to quite early on, this would have been around 5 years ago actually, was a place really in the far north of Wiltshire called Blake Hill Farm. Now, Blake Hill Farm is their northern farm reserve headquarters. So Wiltshire Wildlife Trust has sort of they're split into two in terms of their farm management. The northern farm headquarters is up at Blake Hill Farm, and the southern one is down in, not far from Middleton Down, actually. It's, I can't remember the name of the reserve. It'll come back to me in a moment. But, they've got these two farming headquarters. And from there, they carry out all their farming activity. Like at Dunscombe Bottom, for instance, they'll graze some animals on there. I know they graze animals on Morgan's Hill and places. So they use their reserves as working land as well as managing them as a wildlife trust.
So are there offices at Blake Hill Farm then?
Yeah, there's farm buildings and farm machinery and everything.
But they've got offices where there's the admin stuff and... Bit like
I believe so, yeah.
A bit like Parsonage Down, which is a bit of a
When I was up there, there was an old, there's a sort of, it looked like a bungalow, but it was a building that you could rent out, to have meetings and stuff like that. So they do have people. So the people responsible for the farming activity and the reserves in the north and in the reserves in the south, they base themselves at these buildings. Let me think of the other one. Well, I think it was Coombe Down. Let me just Google that.
So whilst you're doing that, so just tell us where Blake Hill Farm is exactly.
So Blake Hill Farm is up near Cricklade. So Cricklade is really about as far north as you can get in Wiltshire before you leave it, really. You're into Gloucestershire and it's really on the edge. It's up by the – it's really part of the Cotswolds.
Dangerously close to Swindon, then.
Yeah, to an extent, but it's even far further north than that. So it's more sort of the northwest, I would say. But it's northwest of Swindon. As you come out on the A419, you're heading up towards the sort of Cotswold Water Park,
yeah,
towards Cirencester. and it's up there, and it's quite an interesting little town. It's full of history. It's very Cotswoldsy. I think it's the first town on the Thames, and I think they refer to it as a sort of southern gateway to the Cotswolds, and it's quite a lot of history there. I think the Royal Mint was there from 979 to 1100. So there are, you know, cricklade coins in the local museum and stuff like that. Mm. And it's an old Saxon town, so it's quite preserved. So it's worth having a wander around. But the interesting thing about Cricklade, before we go to Blakehill Farm, is just outside of Cricklade to the north is a nature reserve, actually. I'm not sure if it's Natural England, but it's called North Meadow.
And not heard of it.
Yeah, North Meadow is actually nationally famous for fritillaries.
Oh, yeah.
The flowers that flower in late spring. North Meadow, it's got about, I think it's something like 80% of the whole of the UK's snake's head fritillaries grow in the meadows up there.
Wow.
So it's famous. So around sort of, I think it's, when do they flower? Is it late April?
I think so.
Yeah, mid-April, I think, from mid-April onwards.
Yeah.
If you go to North Meadow, it's just a blaze of colour with thousands and thousands of fritillaries blooming on this ancient meadow. And it's quite a large meadow, so to walk around it, you'd be there for an hour. And then, of course, after the fritillaries, then you get the other colours that come in with the later flowers as you go into June. You know, you've got all the hay meadow flowers.
Yeah.
Oxeye daisies and all the rest of it. And for someone like you who becomes botany boy at that time of year, fantastic.
Actually, on that put, I digress slightly, but when I was at Prescombe Down the other day, and it was the first hawthorn that I dug up, right next to it, so I had to be really, really careful, was the rosette of a common spotted orchid.
Right.
So really vivid, you know, the markings on the leaves. So yeah, it's you know, all of that, you know, the meadow flowers, they're not that far away now.
No, they're not. And going back to the Southern Farm Reserve for Wiltshire Wildlife Trust, I've remembered what it is. It's Combe Bisset Down.
Oh, Combe Bisset, yeah.
So Combe Bisset, actually I did some work for Wiltshire Wildlife Trust there a few years ago, where I put my drone up and took some photos for them, because what they were doing is they were trying to expand the size of Combe Bisset, because there was a field the side of the nature reserve which the farmer was up for selling, so they would raise a lot of money to buy these fairly big agricultural fields, and what they were going to do is revert them back to being chalk grassland.
Yeah.
Because Wiltshire is so important for chalk grassland.
Yeah, definitely
it really is the they've got the largest concentration of chalk grassland in the continent of Europe, so it's really important. So it was really good to help them with that, and they were trying to, you know, let the local communities know what was going to happen to the land and everything. But Combe Bisset was interesting. But yeah, the North Reserve at Blakehill Farm is their northern headquarters, really.
So can I just go back to North Meadow for a moment? Mm. I'm looking at it on the map at the moment, and I tell you, one person who will know plenty about it is Wayne Ford, who I think he listens to the podcast. He's got a couple of Instagram accounts, but he quite often posts photographs and little soundtracks and videos on Instagram from the reserves around that part of Wiltshire. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's posted stuff from there and can tell us even more about it. But I'm just looking at the map, and there's a disused canal there that goes along one edge. So it's got the just to the sort of southwest edge of it, it says T and S Way. I don't know what T and S would stand for. It's probably obvious, Thames and something. And then you've got the disused canal goes along the western edge. So I'm just wondering what canal that would be. Anyway, we can find out another time. But yes, I've just noticed that looking at the map.
Yeah, so I think I know the Thames Path National Trail goes through the town, so I wonder if that's the TNS Way.
Oh, here we are, Thames and Severn Way.
Yeah.
Thames and Severn, yeah.
So it's quite a lot of interesting stuff up there. It might be worth trying to
Yeah, that's worth a
go
trip,
and do some exploring.
Definitely.
So, just to the southwest of Cricklade is this fairly large nature reserve of Blake Hill Farm. And the interesting thing about it is that it used to be an RAF base. So during World War II, it was RAF Blake Hill. Now, with many of these old RAF, I mean, there were loads of RAF bases in Wiltshire during World War II, which have now been lost. But little bits of them remain. So you can find, if you know where you're looking, you can find bits of runway and concrete and signs. You know, there was one at Alton Barnes, RAF Alton Barnes.
That's right. There was one in Shrewton, or near to Shrewton.
And Shrewton?
RAF Shrewton, yeah.
Where was that? I just didn't know anything about that.
It's up by Rolfson Camp that I mentioned earlier on.
Oh, okay.
So it's right by the military road that connects Rolfson Camp or the Bustard, Inn to West Down Camp in Tilshead. Yeah. And that's the road that I was referring to earlier on that the military built so that trucks and tanks and things could avoid coming through the village.
Yeah.
And it's right next to that. And it's we've talked before about the Magnificent Seeds, the Ellie Grants who makes rapeseed oil. And it's she, her family own those fields. And I think, well, I'm assuming that is the field that she calls the landing ground. So I think last year's rapeseed oil came from the landing ground, which was Shrewton, RAF Shrewton.
Ah, there you go. They're everywhere.
Yep.
I think we talked about one. And when we did the White Sheet Hill podcast, we were talking about RAF Zeals, which is near Stourhead. So there's loads of them around if you know where to look.
Yeah.
And Blake Hill Farm is an enormous example of it, but if you look on the map, you can see the perimeter of the airfield has been maintained, so you can see the shape of it. But the most extraordinary thing is when you look at an aerial photograph of the site, although it's all grassed over now, you can still see the runway as like a giant crop mark. So there were two fairly long runways. And there's also the remains of quite a large circle in the middle, which was the remains of an old GCHQ aerial. I mean, it used to be, after it was decommissioned, the RAF base, it became a GCHQ listening post. And they had a fairly major area there up until the 1990s, I think. So quite an active site for some time.
So the RAF used it for... they had Dakotas there, didn't they? C-47
yes.
Dakotas, and these were tow aeroplanes for gliders. So if you go on to, in fact, we'll put a link to one of those, one of the links that you sent me. But they would tow the gliders out there, and I think it was for the D-Day landings, wasn't it, for 1944?
Yeah.
I'm just going to crawl under the desk because I haven't plugged my laptop in and it's telling me it's about to run out. So you carry on and I'll crawl under the desk.
Moving swiftly on.
Yeah.
But there are, if you go on Wikipedia, there's a page for RAF Blake Hill Farm, and you can see there's a photo on there of all these Dakotas lined up around the perimeter, and you can see how active a site it was. Quite extraordinary when you try and compare it to how it looks today.
Yeah, and one of the pages on that wasn't the Wikipedia one, it was the there was another one you sent me. There's loads and loads of information on there, but I think it sort of lists all a lot of the flights.
Yeah.
You know, show the registration number of the aeroplane and how many missions these guys were flying. And of course, flying these gliders was incredibly dangerous.
Mm.
And, a lot of the pilots were killed, trying to sort of, I've flown a glider a couple of times and, landing these things, well, it's just, as they say, it's a controlled crash. But when you've got a load of fully equipped men in the back as well, I mean, these things must have been blooming unwieldy.
Yeah, yeah. But one, well, it's an interesting site. I mean, when you, if you go there, you can walk around the perimeter pass. It's not, I don't think you're allowed to walk on the grassy bits because there's it's pretty much just left to hay. So yeah. They mow it for hay in July time, but prior to that time, there's a lot of ground nesting birds and wildlife in the grassy bit. So it's, I don't think you're supposed to walk on that. But it's very flat. As it's an airfield, you'd expect it to be. Yeah. It's almost as far as the eye can see. It's just flat grassland. But yeah, when you go up above, when you look down with a drone, and by the way, don't fly a drone there because you're not allowed to without permission. And also, there's lots of wildlife issues around flying drones that you need to be careful of. But I did have permission when I went up there because they asked me to photograph it and capture it before they went in there to mow it all. But I think there's a interesting statistic on the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust site about the hay. So let me try and look that up quickly. So yeah, so the hay, when it gets cut, apparently this one reserve, Blakehill Farm, meets more than 45% of the government's medium-term target for restoring hay meadow in England. That gives you a sense of the size of it. It's huge. It's 600 acres, the whole site.
About to swear there. So Parsonage Down, where I work, that's 630 acres. That's a fair old size. I remember when you wrote about it. Is this the one where you said it took you something like 90 minutes to walk from one side to the other?
Yeah,
I mean, that's huge.
Because I started off actually at the bottom end of it. There is a bolt on of land which Wiltshire Wildlife Trust have obtained, which is called Stoke Common Meadows.
Oh yeah.
So to get there, I went down a road called Stoke Common Lane towards Stoke Common Farm, where the road ends, and you can park there, and then you walk through a sort of trackway, and you're onto Stoke Common Meadows, which again is fantastic because it's owned by Wiltshire Wildlife Trust. They just leave it wild, full of wildflowers, very remote. You don't see people there because it's not near a town or a village. You have to go out your way to get there.
I'm looking at the map, and I mean, there aren't any public rights of way across it. I know you have permission to go up there.
Yeah.
And it's not open access, so...
No, but it's because it's Wiltshire Wildlife Trust.
Yeah.
It's permissive access.
Okay.
So its own, there's no sort of open access rights to it, but Wiltshire Wildlife Trust.
Yeah.
So you can go in the north, on the north side of it, off the main road, off Malmesbury Road.
Yeah.
I think there's a car park there. So you can access it from there. But I accessed it down from the bottom by Stoke Common Meadows.
Yeah, I've got that. And that's shown on the map as a different nature reserve.
Yeah. But it's all connected. It's like a connected habitat.
Yeah. So just like a wildlife corridor.
Yes, it is, yeah. So I walked from Stoke Common Farm, walked down, followed the rights of way down around the edge, and there was a little copse there. And then I cut back through, heading back towards Blakehill Farm. And you can see there's some buildings at the on the left-hand side of the perimeter, and that's where the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust farm buildings are.
Is that Harding's Farm or Blakehill Farm?
It's to the left of that.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I see it.
See some buildings
there? Yeah.
But a lot of the perimeter paths you can see that you walk along are old. You can see they were from the original airfield, and there are little tributary concrete bits which, again, are part of the old airfield. It's quite similar to when you go to somewhere like Keevil Airfield. You can see on the aerial photos some of the old concrete constructions of or paths that were used to house the buildings that used to be there in the war.
Just noticed on the map, actually, there's marked Salt's Hole, brackets, Saline Well.
Oh.
Well, that's all about.
Don't know about that, but that sounds interesting, doesn't it? Salty Well.
Yeah. Wonder how they achieve that.
Yeah. I'll notice
and
at the
why?
Top end,
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a different place. I mean, it's not, there's no hills up here. It's not hilly and there's no downland. It's very flat, but it's just got a fascinating history. And if you're into nature photography and wildflowers and things like that, it's a really nice place to spend an afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've never even heard of it before you said, let's do that for the podcast. It's complete, and I've never been there. So it's a new one on me. I've never been, so.
Yeah. But going from there, I was going to talk about another RAF base, which I've also written about for the blog. And this was a couple of years ago, way before the lockdown period, perhaps the year before that. I was getting interested in RAF Ramsbury.
Mm.
So Ramsbury's, again, it's on the edge of Wiltshire. Of course, our good friend.
The Bishop of Ramsbury.
Is named after, his title is named after Ramsbury. So I think the Bishop of Ramsbury is the sort of number two bishopric in the Diocese of Salisbury.
That's right, yeah.
So he's number two to the Bishop of Salisbury. I don't think he lives in Ramsbury. I think he's down near Marlborough.
He's near Savernake Forest, isn't he?
Yeah. But Ramsbury is east of Marlborough, over towards Hungerford. Actually, it's quite an interesting area around there because there's quite a lot of Roman stuff that they found. I think around before you get to Ramsbury at Mildenhall, there was quite a substantial Roman settlement, which there's no sign of it now, but they've done some excavations and found loads of coins and stuff like that. I can't remember the name of that settlement. Was it Cunetio?
Yes, I was looking.
Cunetio? Yeah. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it was like a large walled town in the valley of the Kennet. So it was, again, just east of Marlborough.
That's right. It was a very important settlement, actually, Roman settlement.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, one of those things, there's no sign of it from ground level. You have to know what you're looking for. But then if you go further west of Ramsbury, you've got Littlecote. And Littlecote has got a fantastically intact mosaic, Roman mosaic.
Oh.
Which is in the grounds of Littlecote Hotel.
Yeah. RAF Ramsbury was, I was reading up on this. So it was originally an operational training unit for the RAF, for RAF Bomber Command.
Yes.
And they would train pilots there, and they trained them on Oxfords, Airspeed Oxfords, which was a two-engine sort of light, I don't know whether it was classified as a bomber. It's quite a small plane, but two engine, and they would train the pilots on that, sort of give them almost rudimentary flying skills before moving them on to Lancasters, to Lancaster bombers. And again, that's the thought of that is terrifying. You know, within, it can't have been very long, you know, these young men were, and they were all young men, were sort of flying fairly small Oxford, and then the next thing they're flying these heavy bombers, and it might explain why the mortality rate of Bomber Command crews was just so high. You know, we all think about sort of Spitfire pilots and the Hurricane pilots and what have you, but the death toll amongst bomber crews was just far eclipsed the death rate, I think, of fighter pilots. But after that, the US Army Air Force, the USAF, took it over. And again, it was another place for the Dakotas, C-47 Dakotas.
Yeah.
So they were doing the same thing at Ramsbury as they were at Blake Hill. They were towing gliders. And again, there's that website where there's an awful lot of information. And I can't remember which tab it's at. Something, I think it's called something like Souls, as in somebody's soul, and it's got quite a few pictures of air crew, and you click on it and you go to information about that person and the aircraft, and again you look at the death toll of these people.
Huge amounts of information, but it's interesting because RAF Ramsbury now, again, it's been converted to agriculture, and you can still find bits of concrete runway and stuff like that. And I'll talk about the memorials that are on the site now that you can go and find as part of a circular walk. But if you can imagine Ramsbury before the war, as a population of 1,500 people, by 1944 there are 5,000 people living there because of that RAF base.
Yeah.
And you've got the Americans came in 1944. I think it was the 437th Truth Carrier Group was based at RF Ramsbury. And I think it was quite exciting for them to have these Americans coming into the pub in the village and really being part of village life for the period that they were there.
And, of course, bringing money into the community.
Yeah, and bringing money and the rest of it. But one thing that was interesting for me is that I went along to the open day they had where they dedicated these memorials. Would have been 2019, this was? June 2019?
Oh, that's right. I think you first went in 18 and then went back to more in 19.
So I went tonight because I was invited along to come to these unveilings of the memorials. And whilst I was there, for the American memorial, they actually got a contingent from the US Air Force 437th Troop Carrier Group to come over to almost pay respects to their predecessors.
So it still exists in that.
Yeah, they're based in Charleston, North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah.
So they came along and helped dedicate. So there were two main memorials dedicated that day. There was the American one, which I think I've got a picture of it on the website, so you can go and read. I'll see if I can just get it now and just read what it said on the memorial, because they put the memorial stone on a piece of concrete, which was part of the runway as well, which is quite interesting. But it says, this memorial is dedicated to the units based at RF Ramsbury between 1942 and 1946. At 1:59 a.m. on the 6th of June 1944, so on D-Day, 52 C-47 transport aircraft from the 437 Transport Carrier Group, each towing a glider, thundered past this very spot carrying elements of the US 82nd Airborne Division on their way to Normandy to free Europe from Nazi tyranny. So huge impact on D-Day as well.
Just imagine the noise, the sound of all those Dakotas firing up. And was it, you say it's 52 of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
52.
And all sort of taking off one after the other. And the noise must have been incredible in the village.
Yeah, and the other memorial that is actually down in Burnt Wood. So if you look at the map, you can see there's a strip of woodland that's sort of attached to RAF Ramsbury, which is kind of south of it, southwest. It's called Burnt Wood, and there's a right of way that takes you right through the middle of it. But in there, there is another memorial. I think this one is to the RAF.
Yeah.
So, and I think they planted, I think in 2018, they planted quite a lot of trees, 420 trees, I think, that they got saplings from the Woodland Trust. And it says on the memorial stone there, again, on a piece of concrete from the runway, to mark the 100th anniversary of the formation of the RAF and the signing of the armistice that ended the First World War, 420 saplings, kindly donated by the Woodland Trust, were planted here in November 2018. We honour all those who gave their lives in the two world wars and the servicemen and women who came after in defence of our freedom. Concrete block once used to anchor aircraft or tie down camouflage netting. So there you go.
So I'm looking at the map now. And I can't see any sign of RAF Ramsbury. So which side of Ramsbury village am I looking?
South of Ramsbury, and you'll see something called Darrell's Farm.
Oh, yeah, I can see two what look like runways.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay.
And if you look at an aerial photo, you'll see the shape of the runway, and see the shape of the perimeter.
Yeah.
And the runway, if you see the right-of-way going northwest from Darrell's Farm, just where the runway intersection is there, that's where the memorial is.
Okay. I can see Burnt Wood now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've zoomed into the one to 25,000. So Burnt Wood is marked. So that's the wood that they planted.
Yeah. And that's got the RAF memorial.
And that's the memorial in there.
And north of Burnt Wood, where the right of way takes you up to a track, you can see a track marked. That intersection there, there's another explanation board and sort of that's put on a stone piece of concrete that explains how Ramsbury operated in World War II and the impact on the village and everything. So it's really interesting to go and hunt these places out and find them.
And that's I'm going off on another
tangent here, because I can see marked on the map just north of, just almost due north of the intersection of the runways up by the river, it just says pit.
Yeah.
Disused. So this isn't chalk, is it? It's not a chalk landscape here. I think it's probably more clay. I don't think the chalk grasslands extend that far. I'm just reading a book at the moment, and I mean, probably should have known this, but you know, in fact, I can see another disused pit as well, a bit further to the southwest. I often wonder why we see so many chalk pits around our part of the world.
Yeah.
And the book I'm reading was explained, and I should have known this, but they dug the port, the chalk, to spread on fields, especially where there was a more clay soil, because it makes a great fertilizer. So they used it to fertilize, you know, claggy sort of clay soils, and probably helps to dry it out as well. So that's partly why we see, in fact, not too far south, west of that. Here I'm looking at Axford, and south of that, there is a chalk pit. So we can't be far from, in fact, there's loads of pits. So we can't be far from sort of chalk grassland around.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. But I think the other interesting thing is, pulling this back to World War II, is if you go due north of Ramsbury, of course, very quickly you hit Oldbourne.
Yes.
Yeah. And Oldbourne has got a very deep connection to World War II as the place where Easy Company were based before they went into Normandy.
Oh.
Of course, Easy Company were immortalised in Band of Brothers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, in fact, I've just been possibly talking, I'm messaging Stu, and I think we're going to go and do a walk up there next week if the weather holds.
Well, I was going to say, that's the next challenge for Hidden Wiltshire, is we have to get up to Oldbourne and do something up there, because
it's
much neglected of us, and I think it's part of Wiltshire we need to
definitely
investigate and explore and share.
As you know, I've had a walk planned up that way for about a year, so I mean, today's quite a nice day. It would be perfect. So if this holds, we're going to go and do a recce next week.
Yeah. So much stuff up there. You've got Snap Village.
Yeah, that's on the list. Liddington Castle.
Liddington Castle, yeah.
Yeah. There's loads to see around there. And the aforementioned Bishop of Ramsbury, he did one of his little YouTube clips from Snap.
Yeah.
Snap Village. I've lost it now. So I've just found a Roman villa. So that must be the one that we couldn't pronounce. That's just to the southeast of Ramsbury. Is that one you were looking at? Littlecote Park?
Littlecote, yeah. That's where the mosaic is.
Oh, yes. You did mention that. So that's where the mosaic is.
Yeah.
So I think the bigger settlement is elsewhere. I think it's nearer Hungerford, if I remember rightly. I can't find it now. I just saw something south of the airfield. Oh, here we are. Searchlight Cottages.
Fascinating.
Yeah. That's just near Rudge, the village of Rudge.
Oh, okay. I'd love to know who Daryl is as well.
Darryl. Yes. Oh. Somebody's got to know.
Yeah.
Alice Cambry will know.
Yeah.
She'll find out for us.
So there we are. Little bit of a off-piste one this week, but just something I think it's worth connecting into, because we should do more of these, and we will do going forward. We've got other old military connection ones that we can cover.
Yeah, and we've got a few listeners. I mean, John Gretch, who you know, knows a huge amount about military connections in Wiltshire. It's not a subject that I'm greatly interested but it is very interesting to hear.
I think it's when you can combine an exploration of the landscape with the discovery of the history in it.
Yeah,
I think that's when it comes alive. So for me, I remember a while back, I did a walk from my home, actually. I was walking over towards Wadden.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to the Packhorse Bridge down by Broughton Gifford, which is fantastic. It's a really perfect example of an old packhorse bridge. I think it dates back to 1725, and it's just in the middle of nowhere now.
Yeah.
But I was going down there, and I noticed when I was there were all these pillboxes, and then I discovered it was part of the stop line.
Yeah. Well, in another of these little completing the circle, you talk about Wadden and the Packhorse Bridge. I got an email through my own website from a chap called Brian Madgwick, who follows I think, I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but he certainly follows the blog site. And he wrote to me about, he sent me some photographs. He's taken some cracking photographs, actually, of that Packhorse Bridge, some lovely black and white photographs.
Yeah.
I think he wrote to me, been looking at my website, and said, I think we see the world in a similar way, you know, black and white. And he's taken some really good photographs of that Packhorse Bridge. And he was asking if I knew anything about Wadden and the bridge. And I said, he has listened to the podcast. He said, I found Glyn's podcast about Wadden and the bridge, but I think it was a blog, wasn't it?
Blog post, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, it's not something I know about, but I know Glyn does. So I think he's going to be in touch with you at some point.
Yeah, okay. I know, it's funny, there's some graffiti under the arches there, which Alice Cambray again gave us some information on who put it there. And I know that
it was probably her, she probably did it.
Yeah, it's probably, but and I know when I went there a couple of years ago, there was a pontoon underneath it because they were doing a load of stonework, and I discovered it was Andrew's.
That was Andrew,
See how these little connections we make, it all comes full circle.
It's fate, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure the Buddhist monks would have something to say about that. It's all meant to be.
Yeah, coincidences.
Yeah, karma or whatever. Yeah. Good. Well, fascinating. Yeah, really interesting.
That brings us up to the hour, I suppose. So we can wrap up.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another Hidden Witch podcast. Don't know what we're doing again in 2 weeks. We tend to not plan too far ahead on these. It's not that we're winging it, it's just that because we do lots of different things, we just don't know what will fit one particular week against another one. So we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about something else.
Yeah, there's we have got some walks we haven't covered, so we could do that. But it is quite interesting to do something like this and the blind houses.
Yes.
So talking about a particular subject rather than giving a turn by turn instructions for a walk.
Yeah.
Thank you. To Steve Dixon again. So that bit of music before the main bit of the podcast was called Eyes Looking East, which we have used before, and we used it in connection with Morgan's Hill and Furze Knoll, because that was also a listening station during the First World War, listening out for Zeppelins. So reading this and the Cold War listening station at Blake Hill Farm, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
So that's what that was. And then, as we've said, we'll put links to a lot of these things on the on the blog site, so you can click through and have a look.
Yeah, I think it's good because on the blog site you can kind of go on and look at the photographs of what we're talking about. So that's particularly important for RAF Ramsbury, because as I'm talking about these memorials, you can actually see them on the screen. And also you'll see on the RAF Ramsbury, I've got pictures of the military folks who were there on the day unveiling the memorial stone. So you can see the guys from the US Air Force, you can see the guys from the British Army. It was a real privilege to be part of that.
Okay.
I think that's it for this week.
So we're done.
We shall say goodbye for now and see you in 2 weeks' time.
Ta-da.